Hello, welcome back to Into the Void. I'm your host, Scott Ferdella. First of all, I'd like to thank each and every one of you for the stories you've been sending and all the comments and kind words. It was truly touching to read about your pleasant experiences at the cafe and how much that place meant to all of you, so thank you. Hearing those things honestly makes it all worth it. If you're new around here, welcome. Today we're going to be continuing my conversation with Melissa Epen, and we'll be discussing Small Business Ownership 101 and specifically my experience with Southpaw Cat Cafe. I owned the cafe for a little over 2 years, and we were in operation for about 18 months. And we're going to be talking about everything from how you get started with nothing to why I ultimately decided to close the cafe on Friday, June 1st, 2018. I'm fairly candid in this episode because I think it's valuable information whether you're considering doing something like this yourself or you're simply a consumer. So I hope you find it insightful. Enjoy. There we go. Melissa Epen, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming back. That first one was pretty well received. Mm-hmm. Seems like people liked it. So, yeah. Busy day at the office.
Yeah, it's 10 p.m. and I'm still at work, so there's that.
I have been watching the final leaders debate because I missed it when it first aired. What are your thoughts on the leaders debate?
Doug Ford didn't answer a single question at all.
I agree.
And I felt like someone coached him on smiling, and that's it. So he kind of just like had this awkward smile the entire debate.
Yeah, he had like bullet points ready, right? For every that didn't answer the question, but you could tell it was well rehearsed. Like he seemed like a kid that was practicing for a speech. And exactly. He was going to say those things no matter what the questions were.
Mm-hmm. And then I think Kathleen Wynne was kind of just, it was just that whole sorry, not sorry campaign. I think it's a horrible campaign.
Yeah.
But she opened up with it. And then she is a very good speaker, though.
Yeah, she is well spoken.
Like, yep. Compared to the other two. You could tell she's been doing this for a long time and has had adequate training on public speaking.
Yeah, well, she's done it a lot. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I thought,
so kudos to her.
Go ahead. How did you feel about Andrea?
Andrea Horath, she kind of looked like the fresh kid on the block, I guess, because mm-hmm. she definitely doesn't have the same type of public speaking skills. And she was just going hard after the family stuff, from what I remember from the leader debate. Mm-hmm. So she would talk about daycare in Toronto being an average of $20,000 a year, for example. But I think it just seemed like at first Liberal and Conservative was just going to go after NDP because, I mean, Andrea has a huge chance of winning right now. And so I think they were kind of trying to go after her hard. But then it kept getting turned back on everyone else. People weren't answering questions. And it was a very awkward leader debate.
It was interesting because I thought, yeah, at points they were both going after the NDP, and then both Kathleen and Andrea were going after Doug because he's very poorly spoken. Like,
yeah.
God damn it, man. And I know that doesn't equate to political savvy, but oh, it would be tough for me to vote for him when he's so poorly spoken. Like, if you're, you can't articulate how exactly you're going to help the province and what your plan is. It's tough, man. That's a tough sell. But Andrea Horvath, I thought, as far as like well-roundedness, I guess I'm biased. I voted NDP, but she seemed to be the most genuine to me. Like, she seemed to genuinely get it, and less like a politician, which is not necessarily a good or bad thing, but seemed like a genuine person and less like a person with an agenda. Although she obviously did, but yeah. She didn't come off like she did, I guess.
Yeah, I think I keep going back and forth with who I'm voting for. I'm voting on June 7th.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm leaning most towards NDP.
Mm-hmm.
But it's I don't know. I feel like for this election, so many people are invested and so many people want to see change and everything. And I think it's just a really important time to vote.
I think, voting in general. Whether you agree or disagree with the NDP or my personal political views, I would encourage anybody to research it and vote your interests. That's all I would say. Like, vote. People around the world in other countries are literally dying for the chance to vote to change their leadership. So don't sit at home on June 7th. That's I hate that.
It takes
vote. Honestly, please vote. 10 minutes. Like, I drove to the mall, went in and out in 5 minutes. There's no lineup. Yeah. You show them your 2 pieces of ID, basically, and you're good to go. Oh, your voter card and your ID. That's it.
Yeah, it's just so easy. I genuinely hope everyone goes out and votes, and like it'll actually make a change. And I think in the past, especially for young professionals or people of a younger demographic, have just kind of been like, yeah, we're voting, but I think now everyone's starting to tune into what's actually happening. Mm-hmm. And with how tight the numbers are, like, your vote actually matters, so go out and vote. Yep. And if you really feel like not voting, then go and decline your vote. Don't just not vote.
Yeah, and I mean, I've seen the meme on Facebook that people never thought Trump would get in either, and look what happened. And that's not to compare Doug Ford to Trump, but it counts. It matters. Your vote matters, because if everybody thinks the same way, then nothing changes. And politicians depend on the apathy of young voters. So get out and vote.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of people are listening right now because we're going to talk about small businesses right now. Did you see the post about Southpaw?
I did see the post about Southpaw.
Yeah.
That's hard. I'm sorry that you're going through that.
Yeah, it was. It was difficult. It was a difficult decision to make. And when I made the decision, it was probably early May. Sales have been going downhill basically for about a month. So April was a really tough month. That was the very first month that we had ever actually lost money. And so I said, all right, I mean, I don't have any other source of income. There's no way I can maintain this, because I had done everything I could to keep us going. And I said, you know what, if May doesn't turn things around, we're heading into summer, which for the West End, for any business in the West End, any restaurant style business in the West End, it's really tough, because everything in Kingston happens downtown in the summer. And you get like 8 weekends in the summer to make sales. And that's when you make your money in the restaurant industry, is on weekends, Saturday and Sunday. And if you've got 8 weekends in the summer and there's literally something going on every weekend, it's nuts. Like, there's the Buskers and there's the YGK Arts Fest and everything else. And I don't blame people for being downtown. That's just the way it is in the West End. So I knew we were coming into our slow season. So I said, if it doesn't turn around in May, that's it. And that's what happened. It actually was shocking how quickly it nosedived for May. It was nuts. So I made the decision to pull the plug, and that May would be our last month. And at that point, I was devastated, like heartbroken, because, that's just the end of it, right? Like, that's, I don't know if you've ever been through that type of thing. Like, have you ever felt that way?
Yeah. So we had a business, it's called the Kingston Collective. We had it open for about a year. And I guess basically, like, I completely understand that feeling. And I think what's rough about businesses closing too is that, at least in our experience as well, is that it was a fast decision and a fast execution, because once you know it's happening, you kind of have to put the balls into motion, or the wheels into motion, I suppose, to make sure that, you know, everything closes. And even after it closes, it's still not done. Like, no. You're still, like, the doors may close to the public, but you're still working for a while.
Yeah, so, it's the same as when you open a business. There's so much going on behind the scenes beforehand, and then when a business closes, like, I'm still at the cafe every day, working away, getting things tied up, because the work isn't done yet. So,
exactly.
That seems like a good point to start at the beginning and take people through. So for a lot of people who don't understand or may not know, because I didn't know when I started a business exactly what goes into it or how to get started. How did you guys get started with Improbable Escapes? Or that was your first business, right?
Yeah. So for Improbable Escapes, basically Emma and I, we both worked in an escape room for a while. We left to follow different careers, and then we were like, well, you know, the escape room industry is pretty neat, and escape rooms are pretty cool. So we started traveling through Ontario to try to find a good location to be able to actually open up a location. We found Kingston, fell in love with Kingston. It was a really quick turnaround. We came to Kingston at the beginning of May, incorporated on May 7th, and then moved to Kingston on May 31st. Okay. So we like we try to do it as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of where we went to for help, at the very beginning, no one really helped us, which sounds kind of sad, I guess. But we had gone to the Economic Development Center in our city, and at the time, they were just so packed with appointments. And so the closest appointment we could get was like over a month away from when we first came to Kingston. And at that point, we needed immediate help.
Mm-hmm.
And 4 weeks or whatever from the point that we had asked for an appointment was going to be too late to help us with what we needed help with.
Okay.
We didn't need help with the escape room side of stuff. We needed the help with the business side of stuff in terms of how to actually get up and running.
Right.
And so we moved to Kingston on May 31st, and we opened our doors on June 30th.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah, so it was a crazy, crazy turnaround. So that's when we needed help right away and right at the beginning. And unfortunately, we didn't really get it.
I wanna pause right there. So for anybody that doesn't understand how quick of a turnaround that is, explain in those 2 months, knowing what you know now, what you would have been expected to do as far as licensing, building inspections, fire inspections.
Yeah.
There's so much.
So it was crazy. Okay, so from May 31st to June 30th, we had a month. And in that month, we had to completely renovate a space that wasn't in the best condition. Like, it didn't even have a floor. Like, there wasn't even, like, it was concrete poured, basically, at the very best. It wasn't even that. It was covered in carpet glue. So we had to completely renovate a space. We actually didn't do any building in our first space, really, so we didn't need any permits. Mm-hmm. But even in terms of retrofitting the space, getting it up and running, like, painting itself took us days because we had to completely revamp a unit. And with stuff like that, you're playing with waiting, like, wait time.
Yeah, you have to.
You have to wait for paint to dry. You can't even just keep painting. And then we had designed a game, built games, get our front desk up and running. There's back end stuff. So getting our booking systems up and running. We had no idea what we were doing. Getting a website up and running. And these are all things that individually could take weeks.
Like, yeah, and you're
to be able to put the effort to getting a website up and running would often take weeks.
Yeah, and you're at this point two people, right?
Yeah, it was just two of us.
Two of you.
Oh man, what else did we do? It was insane. We lived there too.
Yep.
So we were actually living in the space that we rented from Improbable Escapes because we put all of our money essentially into the business.
Wow.
So for the first few months, we were living there, building, kind of like living in a room that was in the back. And then finally, and luckily, after a few months, we were able to afford getting a place. But there was a period where it was hard. It was hard. You have to try to stick to a budget, but you don't even know what you're doing with budgeting.
No, you don't.
You've never learned it. Yep. And you're just kind of making things up as it goes. And
especially
when it doesn't work. And
I found that with construction costs. Like, if you've never done it before, you have no idea how much things cost. Like, so when I moved in, I mean, first of all, I'll explain where I started. So I didn't have any idea where to start. So I went to the Kingston Economic Development Corporation, or KEDCO, and asked them for help, for direction on where to go. So they gave me a bunch of resources. One of them was Futurepreneur, futurepreneur.ca. So what they do is for individuals under 34, you can get funding if you present a business plan. And the whole process takes about 3 months. So you, it's incredibly thorough because they're giving you a massive loan to get your business off the ground. So you go through all these steps and it's actually really, really helpful. So you have to get your master business license and then you have to present a business plan and you have to, what else did you have to do? It's like a 10-step procedure that will take you weeks to fill out and do all of these things. You have to secure, like they have to see proof that you've set up certain bank accounts and talk to certain people so that they know what they want is a return on their investment. So they know, they want to know that you've done your due diligence to the best of your ability so that they get their money back. And then if everything's good and your business plan is solid, they eventually give you some money. And that was months down the road. So I was doing all these things in the background, hoping that I was going to get funding. Like I was already kind of committing to projects, which probably was not smart in retrospect. But I mean, once you decide that you're doing it, you can't just like wait. I mean, you could, I suppose, but then you're potentially losing an opportunity. So, and then, you know, you go through the real estate thing where you're looking for spaces in Kingston, which, how did you find that? How did you find looking for real estate in Kingston?
It was on Kijiji, actually. Our first space was on Kijiji. Our second, we went through a realtor, though.
Mm-hmm. That's lucky, because Kijiji was probably relatively painless, but, and so was, I mean, working with a real estate agent wasn't painful, but the market in Kingston, man, it is tough. Business space in Kingston is, it's expensive.
Yeah.
How much was rent for your first place?
Oh, God. I don't remember what it was per square foot. I remember, but what I do remember was at the time I met someone, it was a small business owner that was in Toronto, mm-hmm. and they had told me the downtown, like, prime commercial space and their price per foot was the same as mine.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
So the way commercial rent works is you'll have a certain dollar value per square foot. In the downtown area in Kingston, it's roughly, last I checked anyway, it was between $20 and $30 a square foot. And then you multiply that by the number of square feet, say 1,000 square feet, and then divide that by 12, and that's your monthly rent. But that's not all, because downtown you'll have taxes. You'll have, like, there's a special event fees and parking and things like that that they add on. They're called additional rents. With my location, there was upkeep, so snow removal and things like that are included in the additional rent. So on top of whatever your dollar value per square foot is, you'll also have additional rent. So that brings it up to my space went for whatever it went for. It was a fair amount. It was about $3,000 a month, I'll just tell you. Mm-hmm. And so that's not all, though. Obviously, you have every other bill that there is. So you've got employee costs, payroll costs, and then you've got heating and hydro, oil, water, insurance, and then just like daily cost of goods, cost of food, if you're a restaurant, a million other things that for the average restaurant, the average coffee shop, I would say is probably around the $12,000 to $15,000 range per month. Mm-hmm. Does that sound about right for you? I don't know. You guys are probably way different because you're not that type of space, but.
Yeah, we're not that type of space. Our expenses are, like, there's some overlap, of course, like things mm-hmm. like insurance.
Yeah.
And all that other fun stuff. But mm-hmm. Our expenses are different because ours are kind of like cost of getting billed. Employees right. are a huge expense of ours.
Usually the biggest.
We're always building. So construction's a big expense of ours too.
Right. Right. And yeah, so to go back to construction costs, I really only had to construct four walls, more or less. But it seems like a simple build because if you've been in the cafe, it literally is just four walls or two walls really connecting or dissecting the room for the cat area to be separate. My contractor could have done that in 4 days and I required a designer, but it wasn't a designer, actually. It was a designer to do a full floor plan to show the city, to make sure you're making no structural changes or whatever. But that costs money to hire a designer. Now, because my business was part of a larger plaza, the designer needed to have a large building permit. And the only type of person that has a large building permit are typically architects. So to hire an architect is quite a bit more expensive. So when I was getting quoted for what I needed done, I got quotes from about $1,500 to $11,000 just to design the floor plan. And I mean, you could easily get hosed if you're a new entrepreneur. Because you don't, when you hear those numbers, you're like, are you fucking kidding me? And I settled on somebody who gave me an amazing deal. She really helped me out. She saw where I was coming from and hooked me up. But anyway, those are initial costs that you really can't anticipate unless there's somebody like hand-holding you, which most people don't get. Did you guys run into anything crazy like that?
You just don't anticipate. Like, even insurance. I know that sounds so stupid because insurance affects literally so many different things, business and non-business related. But I don't know. Just like liability insurance, different types of insurance to, like, if you ever have to extend your insurance to different things, like if you do anything off-site or if you're working with anyone else and you have to be able to provide that paperwork. Like, there's so many things. And even when it comes to the financial side of stuff too, like I was thinking about this while you were talking, it took us such a long time just to even get a business bank account.
Yeah.
It took us
days. I know. Same.
That was like, I remember we incorporated on May 7th. One of the first things that we tried to do was to get a business bank account. And oh my goodness, not only did it take like a couple of days just to even fill out the paperwork and to keep, we had to provide the corporation papers, multiple papers, like keep signing documents and stuff like that. They would have to send it out to whoever. Then they would get the paperwork back. We'd have to work on it again. They would send it out. And then you think the process is all over. And then all of a sudden it takes like 7 business days to even get a bank account.
To open your account.
So it takes like weeks.
It's exhausting.
Just to get a business bank account.
And to touch on your piece about insurance, we were very close to not getting insurance. We went through 11 different companies, and this is with a broker. I didn't do this. He did this on behalf of Southpaw, but we were very close to not being able to open because we couldn't get insurance because of the animals. So when parents would come in there and complain to me that they didn't understand why their kid couldn't go in the room, that's why. Because we had to take it seriously because there was one company that was willing to take us on. And if we had any issues with liability, if a kid got scratched and we had a complaint, we could very easily get shut down and we wouldn't be able to get insured again. So that was one of my biggest frustrations. Like a 5-year-old and a skittish feral cat do not necessarily mix, or a whole room full of 5-year-olds. But, you know, a lot of people didn't get that. And then when it came to opening a business account, good God, that was just the height of tedium for me. I spent weeks going to and from the bank, signing paperwork just to open an account, and then tell people how much it costs in bank fees just to run a business. Because it is wildly frustrating how much money they take from you.
So I think we spend close to $1,000 just on banking fees a month.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think it's around there. Like I'm pretty sure it's just shy. Like it's expensive just to even have a damn bank account. Like it's so frustrating.
Just to access your own money.
Pardon? Just to access your own damn money. And it sucks so bad sometimes when I look at my personal bank account, which is the exact same institution, and I'm like, I'm not paying any fees, and so many of these things are free, and
because it's like, a business, it's so they take advantage. They do. And we were paying the same thing. We were paying probably between $400 and $500 per month just to have our bank or our money going into a business account.
Yeah,
like
because there's so many different small things. Like even if you have a terminal that's to your bank, they're going to take a portion of it, like mm-hmm. portion of the sales, like 1.whatever% or 2.whatever%. Yep. So those are all bank fees, and there's your bank account fees, and then there's like tax payment and filing fees.
E-transfer fees, like, deposit fees, withdrawal fees, if your account's under a certain amount, fees. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And how much of that money is hard currency? How much of that money is physical? Most of those transactions, at least for us, like 70% of our sales were on debit. So that money doesn't even exist. Those are just numbers on a screen that they're taking a piece of.
Yeah.
That's so frustrating.
Yeah.
So we're about 60% of the way there to opening at this point. So you've opened a bank account, you've got funding. What else was there? Okay, so talk about dealing with the city of Kingston. How did you find them as a new entrepreneur getting up and running?
They were actually pretty good. So we went down, I don't think the office anymore is at City Hall, but when the planning office, I think, or certain planners worked at City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
We went and we talked to them there. We weren't doing any buildings, so that, like, we didn't have to talk to anyone about anything about that. And then we had a master business license, and that's all we needed. We didn't need an additional license.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really good, too. And everyone was very helpful. Everyone at the city was pretty great. So that process was pretty fast. But genuinely, too, I think it was so fast because nobody knew what an escape room was, and they didn't even know how to help. As weird as that sounds. So I think they were just like, okay, just go on and do your thing because we don't really know what you're talking about. We're like, okay, we did our due diligence.
I did have a few bad experiences. The public health department was amazing. They were pretty reasonable. As soon as we were able to say, listen, this is what other cat cafes in Ontario are doing. This is how they make it safe for the public. It's all under the same legislation. So I connected our health department with the one in Guelph, and they said, okay, just have them do this, and that was it. And once they were on that page, everybody was like, okay, this is possible. Obviously, it's happening elsewhere. Here's what we need to do. So that was painless. And then dealing with the city of Kingston, I found that some of the building inspectors, depending on the building inspector you speak to, you'll get a different answer. And if you're a new entrepreneur and it's not streamlined to tell you exactly how to do it. See, maybe because we had to do construction, like I had to build a bathroom and I had to separate the room and create like the vestibule, the two double doors in between the cat room. And because of the new accessibility laws, those have to be a certain size. And with the bathroom, there was question about whether it needed to be a universal bathroom or just an accessible bathroom or a regular bathroom that isn't accessible. Because our front door, there was question about whether or not you could get a wheelchair through the front door in the first place. And if that's the case, then you're grandfathered in and you don't have to spend the money because a universal washroom will run about $12,000. And the universal washrooms are the ones. You can see them in most Starbucks or any new building now, pretty much any new corporate like fast food place. They're the ones that have the button that automatically opens the door, and they've got the plunger for you can call help, and they've got the grab bars and everything else, and the emergency light in the washroom. All that electrical and the buttons and everything else, that costs so much money, and they're not. I don't think it's legislated that you have to have them. And as somebody starting out, if you don't have $12,000 to spend on a washroom and it would be better spent elsewhere to get your business up and running, I mean, probably just do that, you know? But there was, it's unclear. And depending on the building instructor you would speak to, some would say I needed it and some would say I don't. So I kept having to go back and be like, listen, could somebody give me a firm answer before I start construction on this project? If I'm gonna spend, you know, if I don't have to spend $12,000, I don't want to. So that was super frustrating because I got a lot of attitude about that, and I was, you know, just trying to get a clear answer so I didn't have to retrofit my space. That was difficult. And anyway, it ended up okay. We got open, fire inspections, and then it was, opening day and you're off to the races. And what was that like for you when you guys finally opened? Was it hectic? Was it chaos?
No.
No?
Well, no, because nobody really knew what escape rooms were. Like, we spent, I would say we're still doing it, but we spent like 2 years just trying to educate the market on what exactly escape rooms were.
Okay.
And we're still doing that. And when we first opened, we didn't have many bookings. Like, it was just Emma and I working.
Was that scary?
Improbable Escapes for like 4 months, I think, before we hired our first employee.
Was that scary? Not getting bookings on your grand opening type thing? Yeah, no doubt.
Like, we got a few bookings. Like, and shout out to our customers that have been with us since the beginning, because it's unreal and so amazing. We did have a few customers. We had a lot of loyal customers too, and a lot of people that knew that, you know, this business was getting started by two young women, and like, they would check up on us, and it was cool making those personal connections and getting to know people in the city and stuff like that.
For sure.
In the fall, the first fall that we were open in 2015 is when we started getting busier. We hired our first two employees. One of them is actually still with us right now. And we decided to, we didn't decide to. We were given the amazing opportunity to work with Fort Fright. So at Fort Fright National Historic Site.
Yeah.
And that's when things got more busy for us, I think, because not only were we at one location, which was downtown, but we're also at Fort Henry.
Yeah, so and the exposure.
Splitting our time, splitting our staff, trying to get more games up and running. Like, it was a big period of change for us.
That's awesome. I had kind of the opposite effect. When we first opened, there was so much anticipation for the cafe, and it almost couldn't have come at a worse time. Like, it would have been better if we eased our way into it and then had a grand opening like 3 months in, once we kind of found our traction, because that first 2 to 3 weeks were a complete shit show. And anybody that came in the first few weeks, I apologize, because it was awful. It was, we didn't know what we were doing yet. And it was chaos, and nothing was perfect. And it was so much work. I mean, I remember opening day, I basically had one paid employee and my friends and family helping me, because I remember in the week or so leading up to our opening day, I had posted that we were finally opening, and it had reached on Facebook something like 50 or 60,000 people, and I had created an event to announce that we were opening, and something like 500 people said that they were coming. And I was like, holy fuck. If we get a fraction of these people, we're going to be swamped. And we were swamped. We were, at that time, we were open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And we were lined up out the door for 12 hours. It was absolutely insane. We had never gotten close to a day of sales like that since. And for those first 2 weeks, it was like Saturday every single day for 2 weeks. And I mean, I still only had one employee at that point. And so she was working way more than she should have been, or than she, I think she wanted to. And I was there by myself a lot of the time, still not knowing what I was doing completely, because I was new to even the espresso machine and the cash register and just everything that you don't necessarily know, like your daily deposits and inventorying and everything like that. Like, literally new to everything, every part of it. And it was nuts. It was a lot of fun, though. So, yeah, I had 6 or 8 family members and friends that were helping me out for the first couple days, and they were wiped. Because we were all just busting our ass for the first weekend, that first 3 days, just running our asses off. It was great, though. It was a lot of fun.
That's good.
Yeah, it was a good time. So there was that, and it was a lot of hard work. It was probably 14-hour days for the first 2 weeks, 7 days a week, 14-hour days, hard work. And then when you finally find your stride, it calms down a little bit. But I'm sure until you guys got employees as well, you can attest that, like, you're still there all the time. And when you're not there, you're still working.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I'm sitting at work right now. Obviously, I'm not working.
But you're there.
But yeah,
mentally,
but
you're engaged.
Like, I think I pulled at least a 10 or 11 hour day today. I would say on average, Al and I work a ridiculous amount of hours. And I think a lot of people don't see it necessarily. Sometimes people see it, sometimes people don't. But we are, like, we're just always working. Like, for the past 2 or 3 weeks, I haven't had a day off. And I've been working ridiculous hours just trying to keep on top of everything. Like, we're over three years in, mm-hmm. and we're still grinding hard.
Yeah, and that's what you can expect for the first probably 3 to 5 years. It's a grind. And mm-hmm. And this is not to say I was complaining about this. I had my eyes open. Melissa and I were talking about this before I started recording, but I had my eyes open coming in that it would be this amount of work. So I'm not complaining about the work. The only reason I'm talking about this is so that if you're thinking about doing something like this, or just even as a consumer, as I say in the intro, just so you are a little bit more appreciative, or if you were unaware that this is the life of an entrepreneur. We'll leave like a 40-hour work week to work 80. It's nuts, man. It's a crazy, crazy life. And I remember, even now, I'm like, I was notorious for this. Customers would come in and I'd be like, hey guys, have you been in before? And they're like, yeah, we've been in like 3 times in the last week. And it's because, especially in the beginning, I would serve a lot of customers and, you know, I'm pleasant enough or whatever, but I'm not really registering anything they're saying because my mind is on 50 other things at the same time. Like, while I'm serving them, I'm thinking about the previous customer that I just had and what they ordered, or I'm thinking about the things that I'm using right now that I'm going to have to order at the end of the day, or I'm thinking about payroll, or you know, just everything. Your mind is on a million different things at once. So I missed a lot of faces in the first few weeks, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think for me, I often miss information just because if someone thinks I'm present, like if I'm near them, that I'm paying attention, even if I'm not a part of the conversation. But it's like, you know how you open up your internet browser and there's like 500 tabs open and you're like trying to balance these tabs and you're like, what does that even mean? Like, I don't even know what this tab is. And you're like bouncing back and forth. That is what I would say my brain is like all the time.
That's a great analogy. That's exactly what it's like. Yeah. Your brain has too many tabs open all the time.
Yeah. 100%.
So what other challenges have you guys run into as far as opening year or employee challenges? What else is there? Have you guys ever had a bad month? Have you guys ever had a scary month?
Yeah, like winters are pretty slow in terms of, like, especially right after Christmas, everyone spent their money. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a hard time for almost every single business.
Yep.
Everyone spends their money to get people gifts, which is awesome. And then it just dies. Mm-hmm. It's just dead. Nobody wants to spend money.
Yeah.
And for us, it affects us for about like 2 to 3 months. People aren't willing to spend money or get out there or leave their houses when it's cold outside.
I would say that's a lot of the downtown core, I would think, in the winter. Is just, it's quiet. It's got to be quiet.
Oh, yeah. It's so quiet. And it's like great when the first warm day of the year in downtown, walking around.
I love downtown.
It's just, in the winter, it's kind of rough, too, because all of the businesses switched to winter operating hours, for example. And then we have the collective. it was the same thing. Like, you basically have to abide by what the majority is doing, because even if you try to be like that black sheep and be like, yeah, I'm going to be open till 9 p.m. Like, it doesn't matter.
No. Yeah, no, there's a reason why they have winter hours, because nobody's out past a certain time. And you can, yeah, you can advertise all you want, but nobody's going out because nothing else is open either. So exactly. It's, yeah, you'd have to change a lot of minds. But yeah, I guess the winter downtown is the summer in the West End. People just aren't spending time in the West End. And also, I mean, because there's so much going on downtown, but there's also people are on vacation or whatever. So it's, they want to be out on patios. So we were not ideal for the summertime crowd. That's for sure. And for me, okay, so where does that lead me? I guess, yeah, so we had a bad couple of months, and where we're at now, so yeah, I had about $12,000 a month that I had to make to break even. And for quite a while, we were doing great. And then things started to slow down noticeably in January, and we were still making money, but not as much. And then April of last year was our best month outside of opening month. We never hit close to opening month ever again, but April of last year was the closest we ever got. And then April of this year, of 2018, was the first month that we had actually lost money. So we didn't even break even, which was scary. And then, yeah, I gave it another month. I said, if it doesn't bounce back in May, we're in real trouble and potentially going to have to close. And it nosedived, and it was awful in May. And I don't know what happened, but at that point it kind of broke me, and I was just like, okay, it has to close. So I really just checked out mentally after I made the decision and started prepping the place to close. And you know, I'm sure, what happens, and you told me the story of what happened with your lease. But so when you take on a commercial space, when you sign a lease to open a business, you typically sign a 1 year, 3 year, 5 year lease. We signed a 5 year lease. So we're 18 months in technically, and we have 3.5 years worth of rent still on the lease. So I still technically owe that money. And that's the financial pressure that I'm under right now, on top of the other debts that I incurred when we opened. It's a fairly significant amount of debt. It's a scary, scary amount of debt. And that's the financial risk that all entrepreneurs take. And that's not me. I'm not appealing for anyone to give me anything or anything like that. I took the gamble and took the L. I think sometimes you're the windshield and sometimes you're the bug. But yeah, that's where I'm at now. That's part of the reason why that decision is so hard. I mean, what can you do if the business is no longer making money and you can't survive? Yeah. And then you have to worry about...
A lot of small business owners and entrepreneurs don't really like talking about failure, because it's so hard, right? It's like a personal thing. You're mm-hmm. something that you've created. Unfortunately, it didn't work. I hate like talking about it. Most people I know hate talking about it. Whenever you talk to small business owners, they're like, yeah, everything's fine, everything's great, blah. But I think one great thing about talking about this right now is that for other small business owners or entrepreneurs, like, you're going to go through those scary moments, and they're normal. Like, everyone I've talked to, we all go through them. It's just something that nobody really wants to talk about until they trust someone, or sometimes they just don't want to seem like something's wrong with their business, and so they never say anything. But
yeah, of course,
it's everyone has those moments though. There's the moments of being like, wow, well, maybe we have to shut down forever because I'm so stressed out, and who knows what's gonna happen, and everything sucks. Like, everyone has thought that. Everyone's thought that. Everyone has just been like, super stressed out working that seventh 20-hour day, wondering what they're doing, wondering why they left a stable job.
Yeah, and if it's worth it and everything else.
Keep powering this out, but yeah.
I remember when you posted something a long time ago in your Instagram story, and it was like the train of thought of an entrepreneur or something, and it was just this jagged line of I feel amazing, this is the best thing I've ever done, and then it plummets, and it's like, oh, what did I do with my life? I just ruined it. And then it goes back up, and it's like, no, never mind, everything's great, and then it goes back down again. And that couldn't be more real. It was... Yeah. You'll have a couple good days and you feel amazing. You're like, shit, I'm going to buy a boat, which of course you never do. And then, I don't know, the weather will change or something. And you have a day that just tanks and you're like, oh my God, I've ruined my life. Yeah, you're right. When it comes to failure, I was back and forth on what I wanted to touch on in this podcast and what I wanted to talk about, because it is... It seems fairly embarrassing to have to discuss this type of thing, this failure with people, because it does feel like a failure to me, that we went under. But
yeah, but it's not a failure though. I guess for my story, I co-owned Improbable Escapes, and we had the other retail shop, the Kingston Collective, and we were open for a year and then we had to close down, and I wouldn't consider it a failure, but I felt like a huge failure at the time. And I had some support around me. I had some negativity around me, and it was just an emotional whirlwind. And I mean, we're still affected by it. But I think ultimately it's not a failure because there's so many lessons learned. There's an impact on a community. Like, even for Southpaw, you created a community. The animals had a safe place. Like, I don't think people realize that. And with, the Kingston Collective, we tried to create a space for makers to be able to showcase their work and their art and stuff like that. And I've talked to a few makers afterwards, and some of them have just been so supportive, and we both had impacts on people and their lives. And so that's why I don't think it's a failure. I definitely thought it was a failure for at least 6 months after closing, or knowing from that it had to close to when we closed. But it's not a failure. It's something else. And I think small business owners, when a business closes too, so I think small business owners get it, you know. Yeah. It's something that we've all had to think about or face, or be like, what happens if this is going to happen? What would we have to do? People understand, people know.
So. Yeah, it's heartbreaking. And I had a float last night, actually. It was somebody had given it to me as a gift, as a parting gift when Southpaw closed. And so I took a float, and I went into the float. If you've never done it, Immerse Spa, they have float tanks. You go in and you float in body temperature degree water, and it's mm-hmm. about 1,000 pounds Epsom salts, and you close the lid on the tank, and it's you can turn off the noise and shut out the lights, and you're just floating, you're weightless, and it's meditative. So I went in with the intention of sorting out how I was feeling about the closure and the failure and everything else, and I feel better about it now. If you can kind of detach, excuse me, if you can kind of detach your ego from things, it was a pride thing in the beginning, because it's you attach your identity to being a business owner, and it feels like once the business sewers that you're an unsuccessful entrepreneur, but that's not true, I don't think, because I think that's this entrepreneurial spirit is what makes you an entrepreneur. I'll have other projects, I'm sure. And the willingness not to give up in the face of failure, or to look at that as an opportunity to grow or to see the lesson in it, is what makes you an entrepreneur. And Man, after excuse me, after seeing all the messages that I got, I definitely felt a lot better.
Good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard. It's yeah. hard.
Yeah. No, it was. Those messages were pretty touching.
That's good. Yeah, mm. you got a lot of love from what I saw last time I checked. So that's awesome. You had a huge impact.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was a pretty cool thing. mm-hmm. Excuse me. Now that that's over with, that chapter is over with, I think mm-hmm. I think the lessons that I learned and the skill set that you acquire just from being an entrepreneur and by virtue of the sheer volume of multitasking you're kind of forced to do, it's given me the confidence in just about every aspect of life, I think, that I never had before. So there are jobs that I apply for that, I mean, everything seems so much easier than what I was just doing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to a 40-hour work week, or even like a 50 or 60-hour work week would be a vacation by comparison. And I can travel again, spend time with my family, my own cats, my friends. So that'll be great.
What would your dream job be right now? If you could pick a job, any job, what would it be?
That's hard to say. I would love to get back into the field, into education. There's potential for me to get back into that field right now. I don't want to talk about it just yet because I don't want to jinx it. But there's potential on the horizon to get back into the educational field. Not what I was doing before, but something a little different, which would be a dream. Something stable, something with time off. I would love to travel again. I'm such a huge fan and encourager of anyone to travel as often as they're financially able to do so, because it's just such a perspective shift every time you go somewhere new. It's to learn new things and to meet new people and experience new cultures. That's honestly what I live for now. I lived for that before, but just to experience new places is so it's so great.
Yeah, definitely love traveling.
I really enjoyed the marketing of it, though. The marketing of Southpaw, and I mean the creativity that allowed for social media marketing is a lot of fun. I would love to do something in that. Mm-hmm. But I think that's why I love podcasting too. I love the freedom that this allows to have conversations like this, where traditional media, like doing interviews for, not that there's anything wrong, but doing interviews for radio stations or whatever, they're filtered. They have an agenda and they want to get a story out. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I don't know. I'm not a politician. So this is much more organic to me.
Yeah.
I appreciate how genuine it is.
Yeah, 100%.
Is there anything else you want to say? So as far as closing, I guess, you close the collective. I don't know. Do you think that's a good place to tie it up? Should we end it here?
Yeah.
Or is there anything else?
Whatever you're feeling.
Well, I can let you get back to work, and we'll talk about getting you on here again in the future when you guys have new games out or whatever.
Sounds good. Thank you. Right.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Melissa's gone now, but we spoke off air before and after recording, and one thing we didn't talk about that we both meant to touch on was social media. Southpaw had a really strong social media with lots of followers and a large engagement, but what we typically find, and I'm sure Melissa would agree with me on this, is it's about a 1 to 10% return on those engagements. So if I post a new drink on a Saturday and it gets 300 likes, we might see 30 people come in and buy one. So I think a really prevalent mindset is that if a business appears to be doing well online, it must be doing well. But that's just not the case. And your likes and your shares don't matter nearly as much as actually getting out, making the effort, and supporting your local businesses. That being said, I have no salty feelings at all. I appreciate you, Kingston. It was an amazing 2 years, and if I could take a time machine back and do it all again, I would. I'd just make a few different choices. I tried, and I don't live with what-ifs now, so that's worth it to me. If you think you can make a go of it, just do it, man. Just get after it. If it were easy, I think everybody would be doing it. So that's it. Okay, until Sunday, that is it for me. Thank you, guys. Thank you. We'll see you next time. Bye, guys.